Hello. I'm going to try and keep this intro brief because, well, this is the third podcast of the week, so you've heard plenty from me by now. The guest today is Spencer Brown. You'll know Spencer if you are into Muay Thai. He's one of the top UK fighters just now. He was out living in Bangkok, and I interviewed him last year when I was out there for my own training and for a wee holiday. Trained with Spencer and interviewed him. And yeah, he'd said at the time they'd be happy to do it again. So I thought with lockdown going on, this was a perfect opportunity. So we speak a bit about coronavirus and everything that's going on. And we also kind of speak about a little bit more about Spencer's time in Bangkok. If you follow him, you'll know that he recently came back to Scotland following kind of some abnormal brain stuff and some concussion worries. So he's now back in Scotland and hasn't been able to fight for the last few months. But we got to hear all about the process that he went through with that, his recovery, and what he's up to now. So that's all in there. There's the coronavirus stuff. There's a few bits more. And you'll be listening to this on Friday. Well, if you are listening to this on Friday, you get it on the day it comes out. Spencer is doing a live Q&A with Liam Harrison, who you all know if you're Muay Thai, tonight at 7 o'clock, I think. So you can send questions to Liam. It's on Liam's Instagram Live. So he's Liam Badco on Instagram. So if you've got any questions for Spencer falling off the back of this podcast or just questions from in general, you can send them in to Liam and he might ask them tonight. And I'm sure that'll be an intriguing listen anyway, to listen to those two guys chat about Muay Thai and their experiences. Okay, I'll be back on Monday, but enjoy your weekend. If you get up to anything exciting in lockdown, that's great. I will probably be having a couple of beers and undoing all the work that I've done in running ridiculous lengths in my state-sanctioned exercise time. Anyway, thank you for listening and, yeah, cheers.
How's it going, Spencer? How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Yourself?
Yeah. I'm all right, yeah.
Bit mad.
Yeah. I mean, last time I spoke to you was in Bangkok, and for me, things were crazy then. I didn't think the next time I spoke to you on mic could be crazy for a whole different set of circumstances.
This is tame for me now. This is tame. But now, with all the craziness going on, that was a bit of a while ago, wasn't it? How long ago was that?
Be almost a year. I think it was end of April, start of May last year I was in Bangkok, so yeah, almost a year.
Yeah, I can't even remember that far back, to be honest. I'm all over the place. That could have been 2 years ago, a year ago, 5 months ago. But no, it was good. I remember it. I remember the guys coming as well, the privates.
Lewis and Lewis.
Aye, Lewis and Lewis. Yeah. Lewis.
That was one of the most stressful mornings of my life, was trying to get the two of them up and out of their beds, because we'd been out the night before in Bangkok. And like
Khao San, wasn't it?
Yeah. We were staying on Khao San.
Then, isn't it?
Big Lewis just couldn't comprehend the fact how far away Yoko was, like in a car ride. I was trying to get him in a taxi like an hour before the privates were meant to start, and he's like, no, it can't be that far.
Privates were late, wasn't it? It was all dark.
Yeah, well, we were meant to do them, I think, before you trained yourself, but then
we
got there so late.
We had to push it later, didn't we? Yeah.
How long have you been back in Scotland now?
Oof. That's a good question. I think since November.
Okay.
I think early or late November, because I was home. I was supposed to, in my head, I was supposed to be home for Christmas and New Year, and then back out in January to go back out to Bangkok. Yeah. But that obviously didn't go to plan. But yeah. I think I came back early November. So it's been what? This is the end of March. About 5, 6 months, 7 months.
Oh. How you find it?
About something like that. How am I finding it? Not, to be honest, not too bad. Like, it's because it's, again, it's, they're two completely different places. So they're two different, completely different ways of living, completely different ways of thinking. There's parts of me that misses that Bangkok, the craziness and the freedom, the independence. But then obviously when I'm here, I get to be spending time with my family, go and see my friends, go out for a few drinks with my friends, see my gran, my aunties, sister, and everything like that. So, and that I hold quite dear to me as well. So it's all gravy, to be honest. I've still got my apartment out there though. That's the main issue. So I've been paying for that whilst I've been here. But I'm seeing about getting that sorted and getting all my stuff shipped over. That's another issue in hand.
Did it take you a while to adjust to being back in Scotland, or was it a pretty quick transition?
No, it's a quick transition. I've been back and forth for the past 3 years. So like I'm really adaptable, so it's no issue on my part to kind of adapt to the way of living here. It's a little different trying to cross roads. I've taught myself I can't just walk across a road here because people don't really stop the way they do in Bangkok. And because there's no real sort of like lights to kind of cross. Well, there are, but everyone just kind of goes across, and a car that would knock you down here, that distance in Bangkok, you just kind of like weave past it.
Yeah,
which I've taught myself, can't do that. Spencer, stop that. People don't know how to like slam their brakes here as soon as you're on the road.
Yeah, I remember that from being in Thailand. Actually, if you're walking anywhere with someone who's like from Thailand or Bangkok, at every road they would like be like a few feet in front of me because they would keep going and I would stop.
Yeah,
I can remember that from walking about.
Yeah, it's that, the traffic, and then the cold. The cold was the main thing. See, for November, December, January, I've been freezing non-stop. I've been going out with like four jumpers on and a jacket and a hat. And then when I'm walking about, I get too hot and I need to take them off. And then I get too cold because it's fucking frozen outside. Well, it's not, but I'm dying. I'm like just constantly shivering because my body still hasn't really adapted to the cold. I think I'm used to the overwhelming heat out there now.
Just about adjusted to the heat, and then it was back in the cold.
Exactly. I'm fine over there. I'm walking about in pairs of jeans and shirts and stuff like that. But then as soon as I come back out, I can't hack it. It's always about a 2 week period over there. Then you kind of get used to the heat. Here it's been like a 4 month period. I'm still freezing.
Yeah, I think I was just adjusting to the heat in Bangkok when it was time to come back. Like we were there for just over 2 weeks, and the last
Bangkok's
week of training.
Different sort of heat,
yeah.
Different sort of heat at all.
So obviously you end up coming back to Scotland for longer than you expected because of an injury you picked up, unfortunately. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, no problem. The concussions, well, that's the thing. It's basically concussions. That was the consensus from everyone I've spoken to. You can never fully diagnose a concussion, really, unless you've done this protocol before. If you do a protocol beforehand, where you basically do like a... It's like a, how can I explain it? Like a cognition test or whatever. Like, so you've got to like, say like you were to balance and hold your hands out, close your eyes. And if they were to tip you and you could balance yourself and stuff like that, then you're okay. You can balance yourself, basically all your cognitions and everything like that. If you get that test done beforehand, then get a concussion and then do the test after it, and your numbers would have went down. So when I went into some of the doctors, they would have got me to, they had me to hand sit down, have my hands out in front of me, close my eyes, and they were trying to push one of my hands down, and I was to like keep it going, and then I was to stand up, put one leg up, and do the same thing, and then they were going to nudge me, and if I fell off, like if I had no balance, and I would just wobble, then that was a good indication of having a concussion. But it doesn't necessarily mean it is that. I might just have bad balance because I've done it before, but all the symptoms I was getting, all the stuff that I was going through, all leaded towards a concussion, multiple concussions, because this has been going on for probably best part of 6 months, but I never picked up on it. No one else ever picked up on it. It wasn't until I was seeing these flashes of light flashes of light in the top right hand corner of my eye. It was like a the only way to describe it, it's like a halo being formed at the top right hand corner of my eye. And if I'm looking at you right now, I can see it pop up just above the top of your, so say just about what up here on your screen, right? So if I was to stare at you, it'd probably be above the laptop, right? And it would be this bright beam of light doing a full 360, and then it would do, when it go back to the start, it would go off and then do another one. It would always happen in twos, and it generally happened in the morning and then at night when I was getting tired. And it wasn't until I was on the Yorkout tour in America, we went coast to coast. We're in Loveland, Colorado, Loveland, Colorado. And the guy that ran the gym, Aaron, I can't remember his second name, Aaron, I'm sorry. He had a lot of famous fighters come in and doing seminars and stuff like this, and he was talking about how Andy Sauer had just had his eye surgery. He'd had a detached retina. No, I think he had a torn retina in his eye. So what if you tear your retina, is a high likelihood of you detaching your retina, and then you can actually become blind as a result. And it generally takes 24 hours after you get a full detachment and you can go blind. And they were saying, oh, he was seeing flashes of light in his eye and stuff like this. And I'm standing there with a beer. I see flashes of light. And then he was like, what do you mean? And I was like, yeah, I see a circle of light. It's only been going on for like a couple months or something. Well, actually, it had been going on for a bit longer, but I thought it was like a visual migraine that I was getting. I used to get them when I was at school. And we talked this before, I'm badly dyslexic, and if I look at a blank page on a book or something like that, it will look like little dots, and I'll get floaters and stuff like this. Like this, it isn't just a blank piece of paper. There's all a bunch of shit going on. What I see, and then the words move and stuff like that. So I thought this vision that I've been getting was just something that I'm used to. I didn't actually bring my glasses either, because I'm getting a wee bit of the floaters now. So I thought it was part of that, and they were like, no, you need, we'll get on the phone. We called up Andy Sauer, and he's just in his bed, like, what the fuck? I'm standing with a beer, like, hi, like, I see flashes of light. He's like, oh shit, okay. He's like, have you been cut before? I was like, yeah, but twice, but on the other side, because I see only my right eye.
Yep.
And but all my cuts and all, like the big hits I've been taking, have been on like this side. And he's like, right, you should kind of go to hospital for that. So I was just kind of like, fuck, right, okay. And maybe it was a couple of weeks later, and then I went back to Thailand, or even it was like a week or so, went back to Thailand, and then it took me a couple of days. I was kind of just procrastinating the whole thought of it, and went to the hospital, told them what I was seeing. They gave me an eye test, and then they would put these drops in my eyes, or like acid drops to dilate my pupils. And then they would have to shine that. They had to put this. Oh, it was horrible. It was disgusting. It was this like this lens on my eye, and then fire a light through it, so they could see right directly at the back of the light. But my eye had to stay open. It was like fucking Clockwork Orange. See where he's getting his eyes pinged up. It was like that. And they're looking at the eye, and he's going, "Oh yeah, you've got holes in your eyes." I'm like, "What do you mean I've got holes in my eyes?" "Yeah, you've got holes in your eyes. Two holes in your eyes. Your retina's thinning. Therefore, it's going to detach soon, and if it detaches, you'll then become blind." And I'm going, holy fuck, right, okay. He's like, right, we need to do laser eye surgery now. And I'm going, what? Yeah, laser eye surgery. And I'm like, no. I'll go to another hospital and get a second opinion, because they just whacked me with the bill, and they're like, boom, there you go. And I was like, oh, what the fuck? And it was like, say, about 500-600 quid. And I'm like, no, I'm going to another hospital. Went to another hospital. They said, there's no holes in your eyes. Your retina's thin, your optical nerve, so the bit that actually like attaches your eye, the back, it's a bit thick. It was a bit bigger. So I have a big optical nerve. Yeah. And they're like, that's just a bit abnormal, but you were born with it. And I was like, right. So now I need to go to another hospital, because I've had two conflicting diagnoses. Went to the other hospital, and they said, holes in your eyes. And then they started giggling. But then they all started speaking in Thai, and I was with someone from Yorkout, because Yorkout had been paying for this all through the way the guys that I'm sponsored with. Yorkow had sorted me out, and I'm with one of the guys that works with Yorkow, and he can speak fluent Thai, and Anek, good mate, Anek, can speak fluent Thai. But they had said, when they were speaking to one another, they said, oh, it's coming from his brain, but in Thai, that they didn't realise that I could understand what they were saying. Okay. Like, I can speak Thai to a certain degree, but then I understood when they were talking about brain and stuff like that. And they went, oh, yeah, yeah, it's coming from his brain. And I just went, oh, and I dropped my head. And then they all kind of shit themselves and went, oh, fuck, like, he can speak Thai. And I just kind of went, oh, no. So then they all went real quiet. And I heard that possibly I had a seizure or something like that. Then they said that maybe I had a seizure when I was sleeping, all these sort of things. So that was just fucking terrifying. I've had a seizure when I was sleeping and I didn't even realise it had happened. They were saying it was the signalling come from the brain, so then we'll have to do MRI. So then I had to go and do the MRI. The MRI came back clear, as we thought it would if it was a concussion, because you can't pick them up on scans.
Yeah.
But it was me picking up on me being a bit more self-aware and picking up on the behavioural changes as well. I had figured that out just before I went on the tour. I was acting strange. I wasn't really myself. And it was like it was making tensions between the relationship I had at the time with my ex-girlfriend out there. And I asked her, I was like, have I been acting strange? She's probably like, yeah, you've been a wee dick. And what was it? She's like, yeah, a little bit. Why? I was like, right, okay, noted. Okay, this and that. I was isolating myself. I wasn't wanting to go out. Didn't want to socialise, which I'm not. I like my own space, and I like to have my own time to myself and stuff like that. So I can be quite introverted, but then when I'm around people, I'm very extroverted. But like my mates, close mates out there would be like, do you want to go get some food? One, we'll chill at the hostel or whatever. And I'd be like, I'd panic me, and I'd be like, no, I need to go and call my mum, or I need to go and sort the thing at the house. I need to go and clean the house or whatever. And I'd just run off, get my food, run off into my room, and just like lock myself up. And then I'm realizing this, I'm going, this isn't good for anyone here. This isn't normally what I'm like. So I started noticing that I'd get irritable a lot quicker than usual, get really angry. Be it in the gym, if the ties were pissing me off, I would just get more angry than usual. If I was walking down the street, someone say was like stopping in front of me, normally that would just annoy me, but I would get fucking pissed off at it. And so I started realising these things, and I thought, right, this isn't good, what's going on here? Started doing a bit of work on myself. And then it all started kind of like coming together in terms of like when they were talking about concussions, I was like, right, I've got a list of all this stuff that had been happening before that I was realizing. Could that have a result on that? Could that indicate that I've got a concussion? They're like, 100%. I'd sat and wrote out all my symptoms, because my sister's boyfriend used to be play for Scotland rugby, Rory Lamont, and he's been knocked out multiple times on the field. And he's the reason for the rugby having their concussion laws in now, basically. So if a player is suspected of even having a concussion, they get pulled straight out. They have to do that test again. They do the cognitive test. And then if they are diagnosed with a concussion, they're suspended for, I think it's something crazy like 6 months or something, or X amount of games until they're able to do the test properly. Same sort of thing with like in American football now. There used to be a lot of people dying as a result of concussions a couple of years ago. They've brought in a lot of these things. But so he was, when I sent him all of my symptoms, he was like 100% concussion. This may have been happening for years, months, weeks, days, don't really know, because it's all built up at this point. But it's most likely a concussion. So the MRI and all that was to rule out any thoughts of, say, like tumours or bleeding. He said the neurologist I had wasn't exactly the best out there, but he was saying, oh, there's no bleeding of the brain. I'm like, well, if I was bleeding of the brain, I wouldn't have been able to go and get the MRI anyway. I'd be in a freaking like coma. but there was no abnormalities to my brain or anything like that. He said I got a pretty average brain, which was quite nice to hear. He's like, yeah, you've got an average brain. I was like, right, okay, give me the juice, come on. And yeah, but so that all came through okay. So we just didn't have any answers really. So the main thing that was just that we're taking away from it is a concussion, and the only way to really cure a concussion is to just give yourself time and stop training, stop any contact to the brain, reduce your stress, all this sort of thing. So I've just been trying to bring a bit more balance into my life as a result. When I came back, I was like all monk mode, health monk mode. And then I was being more aware of the flashes of light. And then that actually started to make it worse. So like trying to go too healthy actually was having a negative effect on the symptoms.
Yeah.
That could also have been happening as a result of my stress, you know? So it's not necessarily the flashes of light were from the trauma getting hit. It could also have been just from the stress of the, you know what it's like out there as well. It's crazy. It's just nonstop. And possibly that. So in my environment had a part to play as well. I'm generally quite laid back. So like going out to a place like Bangkok, it doesn't faze me so much. It doesn't stress me out, but it does take a toll. Even if it's quiet, you still know there's something going on outside, you know, you still know there's all this craziness going on. That would be the main thing when I would come back home. I would just like, everyone was out the house. It was just me and the dogs. The dogs were asleep. And I would sit there with a coffee and I would just kind of go. Silence. You're like that. Holy shit. Like, this is like the most still I've been in months, you know. And I think that had an effect on me as well. So it's just a whole bunch of things that I've just basically built up and came to bite me in the ass eventually. If you don't slow down, your body will eventually tell you to slow down. And if you keep ignoring that, then your brain will too. Yeah. You've got to listen to that.
Did you see a specialist back in Scotland?
Yes. Yeah, we had to. I had to go private to get the answers as quickly as possible. So we had to go and do another eye test again. Got the eye test done because my dad had just had a cataract surgery. And he asked the guy, he's like, my son's coming back from Bangkok, this has all happened, what should we do? He's like, come see me, I'll do the test. If that's not, if his eyes are okay, then we'll refer him to the neurologist, he'll look at his MRI and all this sort of thing. So I got all that done. The optician guy said, eyes fine, again, optical nerves a bit big. Born with it, no issues, you've got no holes in your eyes or anything like that. But the one thing, my eye has deteriorated in like the vision of it. When they said like, how's your vision, I was like, perfect, I can see everything fine. And then they covered my left eye and I couldn't see shit. I'm like, oh fuck, this is bad. And so it's all came off this side, so we don't, that there's no real real answer as to why that's happened either. It could have been this eye was more likely to deteriorate as a result. It just could have been coincidence. Again, we don't know. So I now wear glasses a bit more regularly if my eyes get a bit stressed.
Yeah.
And a bit tired. So I would just pop them on. Look like Clark Kent. Clark Kent or Clark Bent, I'm not sure.
So what was the answers you got from a specialist in Scotland? Have you given you any kind of clear idea about what you can do or?
Nah, well, when it comes to things like concussions, they're not always so specialised on that. They're specialised in like finding things within the scan. But the good thing was the MRI that I got was quite high end MRI. It was really thorough, so that was really good. The hospital I went out in Bangkok and they had a really good scan. Like it was really strange. I had it up on the screen. You could see it like going bit by bit in my brain and then going through my eyes and my skull and stuff like that. It was really strange to watch. And that was quite scary as well because I was just sitting waiting on seeing like a circle or a black dot or something like that. And I'm like, oh, fuck, here we go. Am I going to see something? I'm like, oh, should I look? Should I not? And both my parents sitting watching, obviously, they're freaking out too. They were very quiet about it, though. They never let me see any stress they were going through, but the neurologist was quite happy with it. He was like, this is a really good scan, don't see any structural issues. I could see how bent my nose was though, They could actually see my nose, and my nose was like off to here, and I'm just laughing like, right, don't say anything until this is all done. And so I need to get that fixed. I need to wait until I get a fight against someone, just break it for me.
I get smashed in another direction.
Hoping it. I can only breathe at one nostril. It's killing me. People are like, get a nose job, get it fixed. I was like, and I go into a fight, and someone just cracks me across the face, and it snaps again. But no, that's about it. He was quite happy with it. Said like, you're just, it just takes time, basically. I asked him about fighting in the future. He's like, yeah, but if you don't want this to kind of like happen again or go on longer, don't do a sport where you get hit in the head. And I was like, right, well, that's part of it, and I get that. It's not as good as the neurologist out there. And I asked him, I've got a fight in 2 months, what do you think? And he's like, yeah, no problem.
You know, just go for it.
I was like, what do you mean? I was like, he's like, you know, like a football player, like a tennis player. And I'm going, when the fuck have you ever seen Andy Murray with a fucking concussion? I'm like, right, okay. He's like, you know, just don't get hit. Fuck this, right, I'm away. See you later. Just don't get hit. Wait a minute, can you say that one more time and write that down? Don't get hit. Right, okay, I forgot about that. Fall back. But basically that is it. Don't get hit in the head. And so I've been training for a couple months now. I think I had about 4 months out completely. No training whatsoever. Lost a good amount of weight. I was doing a lot of fasting as well. A lot of like, not prolonged fasting. I did a few 3-day fasts. That was quite good. I liked that. Just like that's when so I'd looked into it a lot. That's where like the all the cell autopathy. What's the words again? See, whenever I want to sound smart, I can never get it out. I can only type it out. Basically, cell regeneration.
Yeah.
Meets its peak at about 72 hours of fasting. After that, it's more of like a willpower sort of psychological thing. You get the main health benefit from about 72 hours, 48 to 72 hours. So two to three days is like your golden hours for like health wise. Yeah. So I thought, right, well, I'm not going to push myself through anything more than I need to. But that really helped in terms of just like restarting yourself, also like cognitive like clarity. I like to fast when I'm traveling. It helps especially when I'm flying a lot, because when I fly all over the place now, I've gotten quite good at knowing how to change my sleep cycle and how to like not feel like shit coming off of planes or holding a lot of water retention as a result, because I'd be cutting weight as well. So if I fast as I'm flying, I don't hold as much weight. It does help with just like bloatedness and stuff like that. But so I've been doing a lot of fasting, so I lost a lot of weight as a result of that. But nothing too crazy, and still maintain my muscle. Didn't really do much. And I mean, I'm 22 years old. It's not like it's gonna just destroy me. And then slowly started getting back into some training up in Glasgow, EDA, Everyday Athlete Gym with Tommy Young. Just doing a bit of pads, very, very, very light sparring, but it was just like just kicks and no headshots whatsoever, just to kind of stay sharp. I hadn't lost anything. Like, I started kicking the pads and I threw up a kick and went, right, there we go, it's still there, just a lot lighter than usual. But so I've just slowly been coming back into it, and just no stress involved with training as well, because training became a stress as well. It was like leading up to a training session, I'd have to go and get my coffee, and I'd drink my coffee, and then I'd have to put my headphones in, and if I put my I had to put some music in to try and like hype myself up to get into the session, because I knew the session was going to be really intense, because I know what I'm like. I can't have just like a half-assed session. And plus if you like try and like skate past Ty's, think you're a prick for years. So for me, it's like, right, well, I need to be the same as the Thais here. I need to keep up with them. I need to do this. I need to do that. Like, I'd outdo them in the runs and all this sort of thing. And it would be this stress involved. I had to perform every training session. I had to perform at a high level every training session. I had to do this. I had to do that. And so that, again, I noticed that as well. So I was like, right, so now when I'm training here, there's no stress involved. I'd take 5 minutes to put my hand wraps on, put my gloves on, hit the bag, play about, have a joke, be myself, and just take the piss, you know.
Yeah.
A few guys were trained for fights, so I was in there just to kind of keep the morale going, you know. take the piss, give off any sort of knowledge that I've picked up over the years, and just enjoy it for the actual like enjoyment of it, training for the enjoyment of training, not actually like purpose of going in there and trying to fight someone or any sort of stress involved. So I've just been taking that all off my shoulders as well. Yeah, I had my first run the other day, and that really was really nice. I hadn't ran for like 6-7 months. That didn't go really smoothly either. I just went flying. I was like, right, just nice, easy, 5K, nothing crazy. 3 miles, just easy pace, Spencer, no problems. And I went, right, okay. And I jogged around my street. And then I hadn't even had my watch on. And then that went, activity started. I just went flying. And before I knew it, I'd done 5 miles. And under like 45 minutes or something like that, and had just smashed it out, and I came back like, what the fuck happened there? But I needed it. It was a good release, and now I'm able to actually like enjoy these runs and just chill.
Yeah, it's easy to get carried away with running. Last week, I was like, I want to do a 10K before the end of the lockdown, and then I did it at the end of last week.
Yeah,
just built up to it over a few days and just smashed it out.
That's the thing. It's for me. I like running. Like if I didn't like running, I'd be screwed, especially out in Bangkok. Like, we run non-stop. I'd run about 5 miles in the morning and about 3 miles. If we had a big fight going on, it would be about 5 to 6 miles in the morning and then about 3 miles in the afternoon. This is before the session. And then you went into the actual session and we were doing a lot of interval runs and stuff like that. Like, I've always been quite a good runner. As soon as I started fighting and doing like Thai boxing, and I would run a bit more. That was when I really picked it up. When I was about 16, I really started to run, and I was doing well in school and stuff like that. I just get big long legs. And what was it? I'm not, say, the fittest runner. I get tired quite quickly, but I just refuse to stop. Refuse to like reduce my pace, or refuse to like, if I can hear someone behind me, I'm like, motherfucker, you're not going anywhere near me. You're not going anywhere, and then this is just my competitiveness. Like, it's the same in Bangkok. I've been running. It's just that park, you know. It's just non-stop, so it's quite mind-numbing. But it's a beautiful area. But when you do it every day, all day, every day, it can take its toll. But I enjoyed it coming out here in the cold as well. Like, if I was as fit as I was in Bangkok, and then came here and ran, I feel like Superman. But sadly, not so much. But no, I enjoyed it. It's like moving meditation for me.
Yeah.
It was a bit drizzly the other week, and I thought, oh, I should run in that. That's like perfect conditions. It's like it's that pissy rain.
Yeah,
That rain that gets you wet, as my mum says. Oh, it's that smeary rain that gets you wet. All right, mother, rain that gets you wet. And I thought, right, I'm going to go for a run. Pop my shoes on. I'd pair of grey joggies and a grey jumper. I looked like fucking Rocky about to fight Drago. And fired my music on. No, I didn't fire my music. I just left everything. I had my watch. And I just left. And I just went running. Again, I was going to do 3 miles. It told me I had done 3 miles. I was like, fuck this. I'm going to do another 2 miles at least. And because of the whole lockdown and all this sort of thing, like, not many cars were out. Not many people were out because it was a bit pissy. So it was just silence. It was the most silent that's ever been around here, at least in Irvine. It's more like The Walking Dead usually, but with cars. But it was silent. I went around the big moor. It was a big park, and it was just silent as well. Just a little bit of rain, really clear, just some birds chirping and stuff like that. It was awesome. It really, really helped kind of like chill me out, even though I was still moving at like a decent pace. It was really quite nice. Thought more people should do that. If they are going to go out for exercise for about an hour, might as well go out for a nice big run, do something with yourself, you know. It really helped restart me.
How are you finding the lockdown in general anyway?
To be honest, not too bad. Like, I think people are having more of an issue with it because they've been told to stay indoors.
Yeah.
Because they've been told to stay indoors, people are getting a bit pissy about it as well, because they're like, people don't like authority figures telling them what to do, right? Most people don't like being told what to do. Don't do this, don't do that. You're like, motherfucker, I'm going to go and do it, you know? Don't touch the hot plate, and you go, and you touch the hot plate, and you go, fuck, I shouldn't have touched the hot plate. For me, you can still leave the house. I can walk the dogs. I can go and have a walk by myself if need be. as long as I'm not like just huddling in with people or going near people and stuff like that. I've been walking the dogs and the dog walkers walking across from me. We both take a bit of a distance yeah. between ourselves. The dogs have a bit of a square go and you walk off and that's it. I come back home and I can chill. I think people should stop focusing on the negative. I'm locked indoors and focus more on the positive, right? Well, yes, you're locked indoors, but you have a lot more time to then focus on other things. Focus on yourself, you know? You actually have a time and an excuse. You'll probably never get this amount of free time again unless this, God forbid, something happens like this again, you know? There's not been really been a time where everyone in the world's been, well, in the world, mostly the world now, has been told, stay indoors and just stay there. That's it. That's all you need to do. You know, it's not like a big thing. Like Piers Morgan said, I don't particularly like everything he says, but we're being told to stay indoors and watch TV. We're not going out fighting a bloody war. We're not shooting people, you know. What yeah. we're doing is trying to save people. So it's the opposite of that, you know. So the fact that you're not doing that is even more selfish, you know. So for me, it's not that big of an issue. It does come in waves, you know. You're sitting there going, fuck, I want to go for a beer with my mates. Or I just want to go and see people or walk about the shops or something like that. Do something. Yeah, it happens, but at the end of the day, right, you're not getting to do that. So don't piss and moan about it. It's focus on the things that are within your own control. What's in my control, right? Well, what I do day to day. So I've not particularly done a lot with my time either, to be honest. Like, I've actually just kind of been a lazy bastard, playing the PlayStation, watching some TV, constantly on my phone. I'm going, right, well, I shouldn't really be doing this, but still getting my exercise and still training. And then I thought, right, I need a structure again, the same way I had in Thailand, but not as militant as I yeah. gave myself in Thailand. But, like, I've not been reading as much. Right, that's something to focus on, right? At least an hour. Or what I would do in Thailand is say, like, give myself a marker of, say, 20 pages a day or 30 pages a day. I'll do 30 pages a day, and by the end of the week, I've pretty much done my book, you know? So even if I set it an hour, because I don't really work in, like, hour times, I can only do, like, a certain number of pages, otherwise my eyes start to go off. So yeah. I'd say, like, 20 pages, and I would say read five, and if my eyes are starting to go, then I would give myself a break, come back. And so start reading a bit more, get into meditation. Been trying to do that. Haven't been successful. Going to try it again. These sort of things, like, you can actually, you give yourself a, we've got an opportunity here to really work on our own personal growth and stuff like that. A lot of people will regret it once it's finished, that they should have done these things. They should have done the stretches that we're wanting to do, like starting yoga or something like that. I've been yeah. wanting to start yoga, but I've not been doing it either. I'm like a plank of wood. So I'm going to start doing yoga. I'm going to start meditation. I'm going to start reading more again and start doing these things positive, and then still go and play PlayStation and be an idiot, talk to my mates, have a beer. You know, I can still do these things. It's just in the confines of my own home. That's okay. Like, I can deal with that. So for me, it's not too much of an issue. I do understand people may be struggling, but again, you're not, there's no bars across your doors. You can leave the house, you know? So if yeah. it is getting too much, go out for a walk. Just don't go touching things and don't go jumping on people, giving them hugs, all this sort of thing. It's what's hard for me is seeing my gran. I think my gran is maybe getting a wee bit harder for her because she's generally very sociable. Say on the Sunday she'll go in to do they had the karaoke, so she goes and has a drink and has a dance. She's 85 years old, you know, and it's not a nice feeling when I have to walk up and pop a bag down at the front door and then take five steps back and then shout at her because she can't hear as it is, mm-hmm. and I have to scream over at her, "How are you doing? What a cuppa!" But I think she started to realise the severity of it as well. She was very, like, stubborn. And, no, I'm not doing that, I'm not doing this. But then realised, right, this isn't good. So it's more tough for me to see my gran like that or any other older community like that as well. But that's what it's about them. It's not about me, you know. Totally. So for me to feel victimised is that, well, for my own opinion, I think that's quite selfish because it's not about you. It's not about me. It's not about us. We're young, fit. If we got it, there has been some outliers. That young girl, she was 21 years old, no underlying health conditions. There's always going to be outliers. And then there was a woman I saw on Facebook. She was 95 years old with a underlying lung condition, and she survived the coronavirus. Exactly, right? So that they're outliers. So that's always going to happen in any pandemic or any sort of thing that's going on. But it seems to favour the older community, i.e. my gran. Therefore, I don't want that to happen to her, you know? And again, with this whole, if we're talking about the coronavirus now, it's people, I was one of them that was saying like, oh, it's only killed 1.5% and stuff like this, and now it's up to 3.6 globally. And if you look at stats of, say, even swine flu, it was up at 50%, bird flu was 60% mortality rate. Ebola wasn't even that much. Ebola was 55, I think, and that was some bad shit, you know?
Yeah.
But we're at 3.6, and this has brought the world to its knees. But at the end of the day, people need to stop realizing, stop saying statistics. It's only 3.6% of people have died in the world. Only this amount of people or that amount of people. Those are people. Totally. You know? Those are people. 3.6% globally, right? That is individuals. That is mothers. That is fathers. That's grandparents. You know? That's a human being that's died. Regardless of how big or small it is, it's still another human being that's died, you know? They become statistics. They don't become people anymore. They're statistics now. It's unfathomable for us to put into context what these people are like. Right, well, okay then. Right, take all the supermarkets. Go into your Tesco, the big ass Tesco Extra, and wipe all the stuff out, and then pile bodies up. You could fill a few of them. You know, you could fill. You see the big massive units that they're buying to make as hospitals and morgues.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Right, well, do that to your supermarket and lay people out there. Then you'll start to realise the severity of the issue, you know? You know, these are human beings. So if anything can help stop that from happening, you should do that, you know? And not because you can't go for your Friday night espresso martini, you know?
Yeah.
Although I've been gagging for one of those.
An espresso martini.
Oh, honey, no, don't start me. But at the end of the day, I don't want to see anyone else die as a result, you know?
Yeah.
So, yes, it's 3.6%. That should scare you even more because the amount of people are still dying, you know? So if we're in our infancy now of the coronavirus, then you should really be knuckling down on all this sort of thing, you know? Like, what, are people only happy until 60% of people die from it? Okay, then I'll take it serious. No, you shouldn't do that. You should only do it. Should start it now, you know? 3.6% of people globally, let's keep it at that. Let's not let it go up any higher, you know? That's still thousands and thousands and thousands of people that have died, you know? Spain just the other day had 800 people die. 800 in 24 hours. That's a fuck ton of people, you know? People need a little bit of compassion, a little bit of empathy towards this. And I think we'd be a lot further into it, you know?
Yeah. I've seen a few things come out from like Italy saying that they're like they kind of look at the UK and other countries that are at this stage of it and they can kind of recognise that was them just a few weeks ago or a month ago or something.
And it'll happen to us then. You know, this is the arrogance coming into it. We're being told what to do and we don't like it. But again, you'll happily do it if it's your grandparents that's ill as a result, you know? It's because it's not actually impacted us personally, then therefore it isn't real then, you know? It's only real until it really something happens to us or our extended family. So people that, say, haven't been touched by cancer or something like that, it's not really a big issue for them until a family member gets diagnosed or a very close relative. A very close friend or something like that, or a friend's parent. That's when that really hits you, you know, and you start to go, well, this is a real thing. Thankfully, the coronavirus hasn't touched my family, but I still know that it has touched thousands of others.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I don't want any one more family to get it, you know, never mind my own. Therefore, I'll try and do everything I can to not help the spread of the virus by when I'm out my run. I felt like a snot coming on you. You have to clear your throat, and I'm like, bastard, no, I can't. You know, because if I just spit on the ground, some dog comes up, wipes on his foot, or someone's on the shoe, shit can get spread real quick, you know?
Yeah.
Just from something like that. So I was being cognizant of that, right? Okay, you can't do this. You know, we can see positives in it as well. People are washing their hands a lot more. What were you doing before, you dirty bastard? You know? Like, company saying, oh, we're really cracked down on our hygiene. Well, how bad was your hygiene before, you know? It should be tip-top, especially if you're selling food and stuff like that, you know? But people are being a lot more aware of, like, their own self-hygiene, how you touch things, even cleaning your phone, your TV remote control. These are all, like, horrible things if you actually think about it. No one really sits and scrubs their phone, you know? That's in your pocket and out in your hands after you've been out during the day and stuff like this. It's a disgusting thing. But then you clean it and you're like, right, that helps. So we can see positives in all these sort of things. It's not all doom and gloom, and people need to stop being so negative as a result. It's important to look at the negative sides of things so that then it'll scare you enough to actually do what's needed to be done to stop that, you know?
Yeah. It's mad. I think a lot of people that are listening to this will probably be kind of in line with us. Mm-hmm. Probably the biggest change to them personally is probably like the closure of gyms and the shutdown of sort of Muay Thai gyms and stuff. But it's quite interesting to see everyone doing like home workouts and seeing what everyone's up to.
Mm-hmm.
When's the Spencer Brown home workout vid coming out?
Oh, people keep talking to me about doing this. Even my boss Filippo has been telling me we should do this. You need to be fit enough to do those. I've been doing my friend Stephen Campbell with Foxy's workouts with all the guys in down south.
Yeah.
I can't. I'm skipping a couple sets. I'm like this. I can't do this. And then if I was to tell them, right, people, do it like me, and I throw a jump down and do a press up and I'm shaking. Come on, I can't do that. I'm not fit enough for it. I'll just sit there with a cup of tea, just shouting at people. Sorry, coffee, tea, excuse me. a cup of coffee and just shout at people, you know. I can do that, no problem. But that's the bit that's kind of gotten to me as well. I can't go to the gym because it's like a lot of people, it's a release, you know.
Yeah.
You can actually like let all your stress go. Plus there's got the community, like the gym that I go to in Glasgow, UDA, it's an amazing community. The people, it's always smiles, you know. There's always positive energy. There's no doom and gloom, there's no negativity involved. And a lot of them that stay up in Glasgow took weights back home with them, so the EDA just let them take all their gear. I was like, ah, bastard, and I should have picked up a bar at least, or done something. But I stopped going a couple of days early just because of it all, because I was travelling a lot as well. I have to travel on the train, so I was like, well, it's not exactly great for me to go up and down just in case. So I just self-isolated myself. But again, people then can become creative and do things that they wouldn't normally do. Like I was out in my back garden and I saw that we had a bunch of old sandbags that were a bit wet that we were going to use for the construction in the back garden. And I went, well, I'll take one of them. Got a bin bag, wrapped it around, got some duct tape, and just strapped the duct tape around it. It was all really nice and tidy. I picked it up and I chopped it over my shoulder and it burst out completely. I went, right, okay. Tidied it up again, picked it up, it's fucking heavy. I went, right, well, just don't slap it on the deck, and it's like a big massive medicine ball. Found these tiny wee old weights that I had before, slapped as much as I could on them. It was about 15 kilos. There's one dumbbell, okay. Garage, those rafters on the roof, right, let's move all the stuff off, duct tape around the metal and some padding, and then so I can put my hands on and I can do chin-ups. Right, okay. It's done, you know. My legs are killing me from what I'd done yesterday with that. And so you can still get it in. It's just maybe the community aspect is not as strong. But then we've got online forums that we can go into, like your gym or even local people that are doing home workouts, and you can all get together as a result. So you're never alone, especially in today's society. You can be in your house alone, but you're not alone, you know, especially with these workouts that are all about the place. You know, you look on Instagram, every second post is a home workout.
Yeah.
You know, I just get the beer up and down. It just gets lighter every time. It's great, you know. And then you go and get another one, drink. You try not to do that either, though.
Yeah, I was laughing the other day when I'm lucky enough that my girlfriend trains a bit of Thai as well, and I've got some boxing pads at home, so we've been doing pads in the living room every evening. She's working from home, so when she finishes, we'll do them. And I was like, kind of thinking, is this a bit daft, like the two of us hitting pads in our living room? And then I saw Liam Harrison was hitting pads with his fiance at home. I was like, fuck it, it was good enough for Liam, good enough for me. So yeah, smashing the pads in the living room.
I've been trying to convince my mum, going, come on, hold the pads for me. I know how to fight my battles here, she'll beat me up. If that's all you can do, then you can do it. That's great. You can at least hold for one another. That's awesome. And it also helps with you too. You're bonding together. You're both getting any frustrations with one another. Someone left a special K out, left a bowl out and didn't wash it. Then you just get to kick the shit out of another. It's great. And me too.
Normally everyone's so particular with holding their pads, but within a week of lockdown, anyone will do. You get your dog stick the pads on.
I know. I've been looking at Eddie, like, better watch it not kick your pal. Doesn't be a wee dick as he usually is. But it's good though. If you've got that, then that's beautiful. You know, you can sort that out.
Yeah.
And just smash into one another. You know, sorted.
I saw as well, since you've been back in the UK, you've got a new role with Yoko over here. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you're doing for them now that you're back in Scotland?
Yeah, well, since I've been here, I've been sitting chatting with my boss, Filippo, and he was like, well, I'd already been helping him out with some stuff in social media and some of the marketing and stuff like that, and like stuff in the background. He'd pitch me ideas. What do you think about this? So he'd show me designs or whatever, and I would just, more like an advisor role, like, I don't particularly like that. Like, I'm a young sort of guy, young demographic, so I kind of know what's going on. A lot of my friends are in the universities and stuff like that, so I can, like, ask them certain things, like what people are looking for when it comes to, like, say, the fashion brand that we're doing as well, the lifestyle brand and stuff like that. But since I'm going to be here, what we're going to do is get me to sort the distribution line through the UK, basically. We've got a warehouse in Europe and a warehouse in Bangkok. So it's to try and help the link, because a lot of people, if anyone's ever tried buying Yoki gear, it can take quite a while because it is literally handmade in Bangkok.
Yeah.
And then you can't just send one pair of shorts off sometimes, you know, because that costs a lot of money as well, especially when it costs like a set of pads. See, if you're sending a couple set of pads, just the shipping alone is ridiculous, you know.
Yeah.
For Yoko to manufacture and then send off. But with what I'm trying to do is make it a lot smoother. So basically running the UK distribution line so people can get their stuff within a couple of days. Ideally next day delivery, you know. So that's what I'm trying to do. On top of that, it's basically just, again, more of an advisory role. Helping with the show. When we had the show on, I was doing the store there as well.
Yeah.
And any little thing that, and if there's any small thing that needed to be done, that needed someone there, then I was there to help do it. Just be a bit of muscle. And something just to keep me busy. Keep me not too busy. That was the thing. Something to put some effort into, but then not too much that will cause any any more stress.
Yeah. Right?
So, nothing too crazy. And then I help with some of the social media stuff as well. So it's just more of like a laid back sort of gig whilst I'm not doing anything. So I don't go stir crazy either, you know. Everyone's been on self-isolation and I've been on isolation for a good while now, you know. So it's just trying not to go a bit too batshit crazy.
Yeah. So what's the plan for yourself after all this is over and things? Are you going to go back out to Bangkok or going to focus on your training here?
That's a good question. I don't know. This is the main thing. I will be back fighting 100%, and I will be going back out to Bangkok at times as well. I don't know if I'm going to go back 100% and just live there again. But I'll definitely do stints out there for a while. You know,
yeah.
With my life, it's been for the past three and a half years, it's been all over the shop. I couldn't tell you what I'm just going to do next week, 2 weeks, a month. I can never make plans with anyone because I'm like, one minute I was here, next minute I was then going to America and for a month and going from one end to the other. Then I'm in Hong Kong. I know, look at me, complaining that I'm flying all over the place.
It does sound very terrible.
Yeah, but it's very like inconvenient for focusing on things. But the best answer is I don't know. What I've kind of got in my mind is just having a bit more balance at the moment, and then once everything clears up, get a couple of fights in. We'll get the first fight in at least. If that's in Bangkok or if it's here, I don't know. We need to see. I'd like to do a bit of both. I'd like to go back and forth. I think for me that would be a bit, because when I'm in Bangkok, it's all work for me. I'm like a monk out there. It's, although there's all the madness and stuff like that, and I have been out for a few nights out with friends and stuff like that, but I don't like it as much. I'm there to do a job, you know.
Yeah.
I'm very focused. So when I'm there, I'm good to go. And when I come back here, this is my time to kind of let recharge. But I also get really good quality work done here as well. I have a bit more freedom and more ability to structure my own workouts and stuff like this. Whereas in Bangkok, it's generally taken all over by the Thais. And my body isn't necessarily the same as them and the way that they train. But I've been out there long enough where they kind of understood that as well, because they saw it firsthand. And I just outright refuse if I was having to do another fucking 10K before I was doing another 10 rounds of pads. I'm like, mate, that is not happening, you know.
Yeah.
Doing the whole going out for your run with 100 baht stuffed in your pocket, going and getting a coffee and getting a bottle of water and chucking it over your head. Like, oh, 5 miles done and dusted. Just fucking dodged it completely. If you needed the rest, you had to save yourself, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't recommend that for anyone that's ever out there. You'll get your balls bitten off as a result. But it has happened once or twice. But out here, I have a lot more freedom to structure my workouts and my diets, my nutrition especially. You know what the food's like out there as well. It's actually more expensive in Bangkok to buy your food in a supermarket, take it home and cook it, than it is to actually just go out and get food. And the heat out there makes me retain a lot of weight, a lot of water weight as well. A couple of days back home and all of it flushes out.
Yeah,
I get like that skinny fat out there as well, all that MSG and salt. But so it's, they all have the pros and cons, so I'd like to kind of capitalize on both, you know. So we'll see. I don't particularly know.
There's been plenty of UK fighters have done that as well over the years, have kind of done stints in the UK and Thailand, so it's obviously totally doable. Well,
Liam did the same. He went out to Jetties for, I think he said he was out, Liam Harrison, he said he was out there for a year and a half to 2 years, and then came home, you know.
Yeah.
Got the knowledge he needed to know, came back home and implemented it in his own game, his own way of living in his hometown, you know. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I've went out longer than most people do, you know. It's a very, very, very extreme way of living, and not many people can hack it. I've just been quite, I don't know if I would say lucky in terms of how I've been able to see how things are done. I'm a very visual person, and I can see trends. I can read a room really quickly, you know. So I walk into the gym and I kind of see how things are done. That's how I picked up the language so quick as well, and the way their culture, because I can see how this person acted to that person, how that person acted to this person, how they said this and then they got that as a result. Right, okay. Asking for bottled water, I would say there it's Nam Pra, is water bottle.
Yeah.
You know. So I'd be like, oh, so it's reversed. Okay. But not everything's reversed. So you'd have to then figure it all out. And I saw someone come up and ask Nam Pao Song, and they got 2 bottles of water. I went, right, so the number is then in front. So it's not 2 bottles of water, it's bottled water 2. Right, bottled water 2, and they gave me 2 bottles of water. I went, okay, that's how you get it. So you start picking these things up. If you don't know these things, it can be a lot tougher. And where I was in Bangkok, I was in the centre. So there was a lot of release. So I wasn't just stuck in the gym nonstop. I could get up and walk to the shopping mall. I just spend all my time in shopping malls. One, they were air-conditioned. One, they had coffee. Two, they were air conditioned. And three, they were a bit more at home. You know, they're a bit more modern. There was a cinema up the stairs that was all English cinema with Thai subtitles. I could get a bag of popcorn, go and sit and watch a movie for a fiver. Out here, it's about 11 quid. So I was just always in a cinema. So I knew, all I knew was the gym, cinema, coffee shop. That was it. And so I had my own little release, you know, my own little way of getting out of the ball of stress, which is the gym sometimes. It's like going to work and then finishing work and then not going home. Imagine being stuck in your office space with all your colleagues 24/7 every day. It's going to get a bit heated sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going walking out and the ties are going, where you go? I'm going away from you. Get away from my face, you know. Exactly. But I was lucky to be in a place situated where there was a lot of things to do.
Yeah.
That I could go off and do that. So maybe that's helped me last a bit more, understanding the culture, and humbling yourself completely, you know. Some people just prefer the life out here, and I do like it out here as well. I think I'd go back and forth, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because I definitely do miss my life out there, and I definitely do miss my life here. I'm like in a bit of limbo at the moment because everything's all so uncertain, you know. So I'm a bit of limbo. I'm like, one hand's pulling me this way, the other hand's pulling me that way. But for the foreseeable at the moment, for the next year or so, I think I'm in Scotland. So I'll be training and training here. And I'll still be going to do the tours and stuff like that with any like big seminars that we're doing with the Yorkshire guys. I will then come over and do that with them. Nothing's changed in that part. Like, they had the show in Italy. I flew over and did the show in Italy and then went up to the mountains with Filippo and snowboarded for the first time in my life, which wasn't so successful. But no, so I'm still definitely a big part of everything that's going along there. So it's just finding a bit of balance between the two. But again, there's no real answer, so I don't even know as well. Tell me what you should do. Come on, please.
Oh, fuck knows. I think it's hard for anyone to have any kind of certainty at all with everything that's going on in the world. And it's been kind of quite humbling to see how much things can change, not only for people on a personal level, but on a global scale, how quickly things can change.
Yeah. I was just saying to my dad today, it just almost doesn't seem real. Going into Tesco and you have to go in a certain way, you have to wipe down the trolley and stuff like that. Like, even wiping down the trolley, that should kind of happened before, you know. Like, just a lot of people are touching this at the same time should do it. But it's very strange. It's like I was just talking about this the other day as well to my dad, that it's strange to think that we're living in a time that will then be recorded in history.
Yeah,
we studied about this as well, you know. Like, when we were in school and we talked about the Cold War and all this sort of thing, my dad grew up around that time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was born in 64 or whatever, but so it was around that time where a lot of tensions were about. Like, my grandparents grew up, say, through Vietnam or whatever, or through Second World War, they were young kids, and then through Vietnam and all this sort of thing. So they're present in that. We're present in this. And when we're older, we'll be able to tell people about what our self-isolation process of Pornhub and PlayStation, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure the movies will be so as exciting as
I don't think
war movies.
There's not really going to be any sexy coronavirus movies, is there?
No.
But but again, there's a lot to learn from it. There's a lot of positives to gain from it. Just people need to stop being twats and thinking it's nothing, and two, don't be neurotic and be overly crazy about everything.
Yeah.
Just do what needs to be done and try and save as many lives as you possibly can. This is what you would hope someone would do for you if you were in that situation, you know. But it's very scary times, and a lot of people are losing their jobs as well, which is sad, and it's the economy is crashing. But when there's a huge dip, it will then regain as well, and these jobs will come back. You know, people still need barbers. You know, everyone's going to go a couple of weeks without a couple of months possibly without barbers or something. Like, you start realizing that you need them, hairdressers, all these sort of things. Well, everything we've classed as essential, and then there's other things that people do need to go to. You know, and it will all come back. It's just going to kick a lot of people up the ass for a couple of months, and it's good that the government are starting to pay back, like the. What was it with the self-employed? They're getting 8%. Still, like 20% cut of their pay is still quite considerable if you've got cars and you've got rent and stuff like that to pay, or your mortgage. So again, empathy for not only the people that are diagnosed with the virus, but people that are then affected by that as well. You know, so people just need to, I think people, if everyone are a little more loving, a little more compassionate, you know, more empathetic, then we'd be a bit further along, you know, rather than just taking care of me, you know. So, and also the NHS workers that are working as well, but not only the NHS workers, the NHS workers, and also all the people who are taking care of people regardless, you know.
Yeah.
Or even as that is the job that my cousin, Carrie, big crazy cousin that everyone knows, she works with the elderly, you know. So now her job's become extremely stressful, even more so than before, because they are at such high risk, and these people are already at high risk. They've already got like dementia or Parkinson's and stuff like this. So that's become really stressful for her. So it's not that, I had this conversation with someone, this woman on Instagram, she was saying, oh, it's annoying that all these NHS workers get all the fame and all this sort of thing, when us other workers aren't getting it. Well, wait a minute, you didn't do the job for the fame, you know. But I do agree that yes, we should be aware of people like these people that are taking care of people, and we should all show our appreciation for it, but they're not doing, my cousin Carrie isn't doing that for the fame, you know.
Totally.
But a little empathy for them, for the people they're taking care of, for the people who are affected by the virus financially, just a bit of compassion, and I think we'd all be a little further on, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a good note to wrap up on.
Yeah,
I'm trying to keep these podcasts a little bit shorter because I'm trying to put them out quite quick.
You know what I'm like, I just ramble on. need to reel me back.
No worries. Well, thanks for speaking to me. We might catch up again before the end of this. Yeah, well, depending on how lockdown goes on.
So
that's what everyone says. Everyone's like, "Yeah, I'll do the podcast. I've got nothing else to do." I'm like, right, it's a good time to be a podcaster.
That kind of compliment.
It's a good time to do podcasts.
I'll talk to you. No, I do enjoy these. These are good, you know, and what you do and everything for mental health and stuff like that. Like, and if I can help in any sort of way, the stuff that I've been through or lived through, whatever, if I can help in any way, I will do. So just give me a call.
Will do. Okay, take it easy, man. Thanks very much.
Take care, yeah.
Okay, hope you enjoyed that. Just a reminder that Spencer will be on Liam Harrison's Instagram doing a live Q&A tonight at 7 o'clock, so get any questions you've got for those guys into Liam. And I hope you enjoy that. I'm hoping to have listened to that myself. Sure, it'll be really interesting. Okay, thanks for listening. If you listen to all three podcasts I put out this week, well done, you're a fucking trooper. There should be three more for you next week. And if you've got any suggestions for topics or guests or anything like that, please give me a shout. I want to try and kind of have these podcasts be as specific to what people are looking for as possible, because there's quite a lot of content coming out as I've got plenty of time. And I hope people enjoyed them. Let me know. We might have Spencer on again. We discussed a couple of ideas. So if you really enjoy this one with Spencer and you like to have him back on, speaking about anything different, anything related to current events, or maybe just anything specific about his career or his experiences in Thailand, let us know, and I'm sure we can sort that out. Okay, thank you very much. Cheers.